Holy God, startle us in this moment. Startle us with the mystery that is beyond our comprehension, that mystery that doesn't kind of fit nicely into our categories. The mystery of your love. Your love coming in the presence of a helpless, vulnerable child. The mystery of your love, always with us. Amen. There is this monastery that had this vow of silence, where in order to enter into this monastery, you had to be silent for an entire year. I wouldn't qualify. A new monk comes in and he enters this monastery and was told that you have to be silent for a whole year, and at the end of the year, the leader of the monastery, the abbot, is going to come, and you're going to be allowed to speak two words. So he started. He was silent for a whole year. And then the abbot came, and what is your two words? And he said, food, terrible. Then he entered another year of absolute silence. And then after another year of silence, the abbot came. What is your two words? Bed lumpy. So he entered another year of silence. And this time when the abbot came, he kind of approached with some fear and trepidation. What is he going to say? And this time he said, I quit. And the abbot said, you know, I'm not surprised. All you've done since you've been here is complain. See those two words right there? Can you say them with me? Fear not. One more time. Fear not. You know, there are some scholars who suggest if you condense the entire Bible, if you condense the entire biblical narrative to two words, there it is. Fear not. There are many who believe that that is the message of the Bible in a nutshell. Fear not. It's a tough message. Because it's hard to love when you're afraid. It's hard to care passionately when you're afraid. It's hard to take risks when you're afraid. It's hard to step outside of your comfort zones when you're afraid. You know, it's hard to speak up. To stand up, speak up, and be counted, particularly when it might go against cultural trends or cultural attitude. It's hard to do that when you're afraid. It's hard to seek justice. It's hard to seek justice for those who are less privileged than we are, those who are oppressed, to be a voice for the voiceless when you're afraid. It's hard to love, not just love, but love in the way of Jesus when you're afraid. It's hard to be authentically you because there are so many people and so many kind of forces that expect and demand us to be someone other than who we really are. It's hard to be you when you're afraid. So maybe it's not so surprising that the most central message in the entire Bible, don't be afraid. Fear not. Because the thing about fear is fear always goes along for the ride. I don't think to a certain extent it's possible to just fear not, to abolish fear, to just have fear all go away. What I want to suggest is there a way that we can have fear sit in the back seat rather than have the steering wheel of our car? And when fear is in the back seat, maybe we can prevent ourselves from taking the snacks that it likes to offer us that tend to then we feed on and we feed our fears. So maybe it's more about allowing fear to be our servant, but fear is a horrible master. Because here's the thing, there's a gentleman by the name of Peter Gomes who was the chaplain at Harvard Divinity School. And he said his fear is as a nation, we have become a fearful nation. That particularly since 9/11, he said, my fear is that we have allowed fear to define us, fear to shape us. So we now no longer make decisions on our hopes and on our faith and on our dreams. But we make our decisions based mostly on what we're afraid of. The poet Robert Frost said, "Nothing scares me more than scared people." I think it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, right? When the nation was gripped by fear, what did he say? The only thing to fear is fear itself. Because when we allow fear to shape us, when we allow fear to define us, when we allow fear to take over and overwhelm us, it has a tendency to rob us of that which is most ourselves, which is our capacity to love, to be compassionate, to be empathetic. So Jesus said, love one another. To love one another, fear not. So this Advent, we're going to be looking at the four different times in the Christmas story where we hear that message. If you were to tell the Christmas story, where would you begin? If I asked you, okay, tell me the Christmas story, where would you begin? Where would you begin? This is the participation part. Sorry? The Annunciation of Mary, okay? What are some other ideas where you'd begin? Drummer boy? Morgan would begin with drummer boy. Let me find that in the Bible. You're on fire today. Where would you begin? Annunciation of Mary, drummer boy. Some of you might begin maybe, yeah, Dolly? Ah, beautiful, John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Where else might you begin?
The shepherds
proclaiming, hearing that proclamation of this incredible event that happening. Go check it out. Some of you might begin with the star. My guess is none of you would begin where I'm going to begin. And it's where Luke begins, in Luke 1. And it's about, the Bible is so polite. It's about a couple who are in advanced age, Zechariah and Elizabeth. So it really is a story of Zechariah and Elizabeth, and we're told in the Bible that they're of advanced age. And Zechariah and Elizabeth, I'll jump ahead. They were the parents of John the Baptist. So here's the story. I want to read it. I'll read it. And it's from Luke 1, beginning in verse 5. In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God. They lived blameless lives before God. They had no children. Elizabeth was barren, and they both were getting on in years. A couple things to understand in this particular culture, at this particular time. Everybody longed for a child. Everybody expected a child. You were expected to have a child, and most people expected and wished for a son. And it was generally viewed in that particular culture that if for some reason you did not have a child, you are cursed by God. That you obviously have been sinful, you've done something wrong, and this is your punishment of not having a child. But it's interesting, Luke is emphatic. Zechariah and Elizabeth were blameless. They were righteous before God. So it's odd that Elizabeth doesn't have a child. And it was also a disaster in that particular culture if you didn't have children, because your children actually took care of you in advanced age. I have two sons that continually tell them, be nice to each other, because one of you is going to take care of us. So you kind of need to be nice to each other right now. But that's generally what happened. So if you can picture for me Elizabeth and Zechariah, they were a disgrace to their neighbors, a disgrace to their family. Probably they had prayed for years and years and years that they might have a child, and I'm guessing somewhere along the line, they gave up They resign themselves that this is our lot in life. This is the way it's going to be. Okay? So once when Zechariah was serving as priest before God, and he was chosen by drawing straws, according to the custom of the priesthood, to enter the sanctuary of the Lord and offer incense. Now at that time of the incense offering, the whole assembly of the people, they were praying outside. Now here, what's happened here is Zechariah was a priest. And every year for 2 weeks, all the priests would go to Jerusalem. And their job was to serve the temple in Jerusalem. So their job was to light candles, to burn incense, to check emails, update the website, all of sweep the floors, all of those. That's the job of the priests. But it was one priest, and only one, got the sacred duty to enter into the Holy of Holies, the inner sanctuary, where it was believed that God dwelled. And that priest's job was to light incense because the smoke would represent the prayers of the people. And then the priest would then go out and bless the congregation. Now, this was a once-in-a-lifetime chance. Most priests never had that opportunity. And lo and behold, it says Zechariah was chosen to enter into the Holy of Holies, the light to encounter. That's where God lived. And here's what it says. And while he was there, an angel of the Lord appeared to him. When Zechariah saw the angel, he was terrified, and fear overwhelmed him. Isn't that kind of odd? Because, I mean, to me, it's where God lives. You know, we're told that, you know, if you go into this place, it's going to be crazy. If you go into this place, you're going to encounter God. You know, you're going to encounter the sacred. You're going to experience the divine. This place is going to blow your socks off. So Zechariah actually goes in, encounters the sacred, encounters the divine, encounters an angel, and he's surprised. So one would think he didn't actually expect anything to happen. He had his duty. His duty was to light incense. And he was going about his duty, but he didn't expect anything extraordinary, anything unbelievable. Let me ask you, do you expect to meet the holy? Do you expect to encounter the divine? Do you expect to experience God? When you come to worship, do you expect something to happen here that will, like, stir your spirit? When you're walking along the river, do you expect when you're walking along the river to have just this overwhelming sense of the sacredness of the gift of creation? Or are you counting your steps to make sure you get to 10,000 by the end of the day? You know, when you're having a conversation with somebody, do you really expect in that conversation that you are having a holy encounter with this other person? Or are you just simply waiting till they take a breath so that you can give them advice? It's interesting, we are told this incredible mystery that God is with us, that God is present. But do we expect to actually experience God? So let me go further. So what happens? The angel says to Zechariah, "Fear not, don't be afraid. Your wife Elizabeth will bear a son. You will name him John. You will have joy and gladness, and your son will make a way and prepare people for the way of the Lord." And Zechariah said, "Huh? What are you talking about?" Zechariah said, "I don't see how that's possible." Zechariah says, "That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. That's not logical. That's not rational. We're like an advanced age. We're like way beyond this. This is not possible. This can't happen to us. You must have me mistaken for someone else." And then it says, the angel said, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God. I've been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. You did not believe my words. You will become mute, unable to speak until the day these things occur. This is a wild story. So here's the deal. So then Zechariah is struck mute. He can't speak for 9 months. Most of you right now are thinking, now, a religious person, a priest, a religious professional who speaks for a living, having them be struck mute. Now, that would be the Christmas gift I'd really like. So think about this. Zechariah can't speak. He's mute for 9 months. And here's what happens. Elizabeth actually conceives a son. After 8 days, there's a naming ceremony. And everybody thinks, oh, he should be named Zechariah because that's tradition. And Zechariah asks for a tablet, and on the tablet he writes, his name will be John. And the moment he writes that, his tongue is loosened. And he says, by the tender mercy of God, from on high, a light will come. A light will come to those who sit in darkness. A light will come to those who sit in the darkness of the shadow of death. A light will come to guide your feet on the way to peace. So what happened to Zechariah? Something changed. Something transformed for him, where he now had this overwhelming sense of a light that was coming into the darkness. Here's the deal. Many scholars interpret this that the angel was punishing Zechariah for unbelief. I don't think so. I think the angel was giving Zechariah a gift, the gift of silence. Because if he would have been able to speak, his job would have been to leave that temple and to explain to people what can't be explained. Instead, he was silent. For 9 months, his job was to be present, to be still, to pay attention, not to speak, but to listen. Right now, everything's ramping up outside. Things are getting busier. You know, the to-do list is getting longer. We have to shop. We have to buy those cards. Our calendar's getting full with this event and that event. And the lights are going on all of the houses, and they're flashing, and there's displays, and there's lots of noise and activity. And yet there's this invitation to be still, to ponder a mystery we can't explain. Fear not. God is with you. Walter Brueggemann is the most famous biblical scholar there is, people say. And Walter Brueggemann was with a gathering of pastors. And he said to these pastors, he said, do you remember when you were a little child? And you're a little child and you were convinced there was a monster just outside the window. And you're just scared, you know, you're scared because you heard the wind beating against the window and you're convinced there's a monster. And then you heard the creaking on the stairs and you're convinced that something was going to happen. And then something was under your bed. And you cried out in fear. And your mom and dad would come down. And one of them would pick you up and hold you and say, don't be afraid. I'm here. And I'm not going anywhere. Walter Brueggemann said, that's the Christian message. Fear not. It's what God said to the people who are wandering lost in the wilderness. Fear not. It's what the psalmist said, you know, those of you who are walking through the valley of the shadow of death, don't be afraid. God is with you. It's what the angel said to Zechariah. It's what the angel said to Joseph and Mary. Fear not. It's what the angel said to the woman who arrived at the empty tomb. Fear not. It's what Jesus says to all of us. Fear not. God is with you. Yesterday, I had the sacred privilege, so humbled, that I anointed the head of a woman who is moments away from her transition from this life to more life. And I anointed her head, and I said, "Fear not. You belong to God, today, forever. Fear not, you're loved with a love that will never let you go. Fear not, there is nothing, nothing in all creation, nothing in life or death that can ever separate you from God's love. Fear not, you are God's beloved. You are held in God's love, and nothing can change that. No one can take that from you. Fear not." And as I was driving home, it occurred to me that we anoint people as they are about to face that mystery from this life to more life. But we should be anointed every morning we get up, as we're invited to live authentically who we are. As we're invited to love with a love stronger than even death itself. As we're invited to stand up against hate, stand up against racism. As we're invited to be the presence of love in this world, the presence of peace in this world, the presence of hope in this world. Every morning we should be anointed and hear the whisper of the angels. Fear not. I will be with you every step of the way. I invite you to join me in this affirmation of faith, which you'll find up on the screen from Psalm 139. Let us join our voices. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you.